Welcome to the Minovate Gang Podcast, episode 122 from Best Buy's headquarters and mini bar. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good afternoon.
Graham Thickens.
Hello.
Mr. Phil Wilson.
Hello.
Inside the distance. Inside the coffee can.
Here. That's right. And our very special guest, Matt Dornquist with Code 42 Software and Crash Plan in specific, which we've talked about before on the podcast. How are you doing, Matt?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good to be here.
So can you tell us about Code 42 and just about your organization? Because you're not just Crash Plan.
No, we're not. We are a Minnesota software company founded in 2001, kind of at the bottom of the dot-com crash there. And we started out in the services business, launched a few products for big companies. We actually did 20 products in 5 years.
Wow.
Was our record there. But that was all services work. And we had this idea, Crash Plan, that was our first product. So we launched that in 2007.
And then, wow. Well, it's been a
enterprise product in 2008.
So counter to the rumor, it's not software to crash your computer.
No.
To back up your computer, right?
Did you start that rumor? Where did that come from?
No, that was Phil.
No!
Phil did that.
No. It's really hard to find. There should be a session today at Minibar on how to name your product. Because it is incredibly difficult these days to find an available name that meets all the criteria.
So, I mean, let's talk about that. Does Crash Plan meet that? Has it met your needs? Is it a well understood?
Yeah, actually, there's two parts to that. Historically, it's been fantastic. It's a very good brand. People get what it does. It's memorable. It looks great. It translates well into the enterprise. As we branch out into other products, it's increasingly difficult. So we're sort of readjusting our marketing message and putting more of an emphasis on Code 42 as the parent now that we're about to become a multi-product company here later this year.
So as you develop from evolve from Code 42 and making services and then building a product with Crash Plan, was there there seemed to be a period there in Crash Plan where there was a really rapid buildup of users and that sort of a thing. Did you see market growth when you hopped into the actual product? I mean, was it a culture change for you guys?
No, it was a dream come true.
Yeah.
And a nightmare come true at the same time. we went to Macworld in 2007 and thought, wouldn't it be great if we could convince a few hundred people to try our service out? And we did. We actually sold, maybe close to 1,000, and we were pretty excited. And I got off the plane back here in Minnesota, and the first person I call is the office. How's it going? And we're down. We're down. And I'm like, what? How? And they're like, we're on the front page of Dig.
We had
30,000 plus people clamoring at us. Was not intended. Never anticipated it. So for one of the early lessons, plan for the social event in case you get lucky. Mm-hmm. So that was arguably our first mistake, was not being prepared for that kind of volume. We thought, a few hundred people, take care of them, work through any kinks that we discover, start marketing later. And all of 2007 was catch up pretty much from that moment on.
Are you guys finding, and this may sound like a little bit out of left field question, but I've had so many discussions here at Minibar about this same sort of thing, about regarding the television space, regarding new services that people are talking about and ideas. And it has to do with ISP bandwidth caps. Mm. And so, Comcast, as an example, Time Warner, and now AT&T, especially on mobile, they're all coming with bandwidth caps. And so do you find that as something that's going to materially impact what you do?
Not too much, for two reasons. One, we are, if you're a successful cloud computing company like we are, you're a global company. So we have audiences all around the world in all kinds of mediums. So Australia, for instance, has very expensive caps in place, much more restricted than we have.
Okay.
And so we're dealing with that there. And it's that, those are just problems where, you can shape your product. Those are opportunities. Those are features in waiting. So you'll see, well, we have the seed technology that we do. We'll ship you a drive to do the initial terabyte or two. And then if you ever need your data back quickly, we'll ship it to you again. We'll overnight it. So, you know, and ironically, FedEx is many times faster when you get into the larger data amounts than any bandwidth package for any consumer.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's not that big of a deal. Mobile is actually more concerning, I think. You know, as we transition out of the laptop desktop and into these tablet devices where, I mean, I don't know what your cap is, but mine's pretty small. I think it's like 5 gig or something. Mm-hmm. And I can chew through that
for
pretty
3G
easily.
Or on 3G, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty significant cap, you know.
Yeah. So what are you guys doing with the post-PC sort of device like the iPad?
Not a whole lot as of yet, publicly.
As far as we know.
Tell us today.
Dropbox.
We want scoop.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there's certainly a lot of opportunity in this space.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that there's, even though there's a great group of sort of first round participants out there that are doing things pretty good, there's a lot of room still for innovation. So. You'll see, as that's when I hinted earlier about other products, you know, it's less important to worry about crashing on these. It's more important to worry about, you know, securing your photos and synchronizing them and sharing them.
So. Well, and that's one of the reasons, you know, we at one point were talking about Posterous, the Tumblr-like microblogging platform. And one of the beautiful things about that was, unlike a TypePad, you know, God forbid TypePad goes down, everything you put in there is gone.
Right.
With Posterous, you put it in, and your images go to Flickr, and your videos go to YouTube, and your post can even go to your own blog, and so forth, or a hidden one. So you essentially back up your data, and you've got it in multiple places. And I know for me personally, and a lot of people I've talked with, and even people here and watching, that they want access to all their data. So they're using different ways to get into it, because there really isn't. Even though Dropbox has got a lot of juice, it's still not there. I mean, they're 50 or 100 gigs is kind of their two tiers, and people want access to their data.
They're limited because they're on top of Amazon's infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I always find it interesting. I don't know if it's because I'm from Minnesota, but I find Amazon's pricing to be outrageous, extremely expensive. We built our own clouds. We have clouds in Dublin, Japan, Singapore, all over the United States, and we run our own data centers. It saves a lot of money. And so when you
so
if we were to do that, you know, our cost structure would be substantially different.
So are they more expensive on this just the storage piece or on bandwidth or both?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, both. You know, offline, I'd love to talk with you. I can show you what the industry's been doing with bandwidth. It's very interesting.
Okay, everyone stop listening now.
Yeah. That's not usually a problem.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Yeah. We're going offline. Wait.
Let's talk a little bit about
the red lights on.
About sort of competitive. I've been a user for a long time.
Yeah.
And it just seems like there's more and more competitors, but you keep growing.
Yeah.
There's nothing in my mind more compelling for backup than what you guys are doing.
Oh, thank you.
So even the big players like Amazon now with their cloud drive stuff.
Right.
So do you see even the big players kind of coming in and being threatening? Or do you see like what Apple did with Time Machine and all that kind of stuff sort of like helping you in some ways?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's I learned early on, I've been in this biz for quite a while, and you should never fear competition. It's more of a validation and a chance to differentiate.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs a lot of money to, for instance, educate a consumer market that they should even back up or that there are these online alternatives. And so when you have other people in the space that are helping to sort of bear the burden of that cost, it benefits you. So it can be a good thing. If you have a better technology, a better product, competition is a great thing.
So I'm sure you're going to be at WWDC, and let's say on stage someone like Schiller or somebody says, okay, we built this big data center in North Carolina, here's iTunes on the web, here's our
iDisk, and
our next
whatever.
Version of Mobile
exactly.
Me, which is killer.
Oh,
we give you
God, please,
20,
I can't
20
wait.
Gigs for free.
And you'll never have to connect your USB cable again. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, it would be great.
Yeah.
So does that kind of like get you a little bit riled up? Or
No. Well, first of all, Apple's an amazing partner. We work very closely with them. And, you know, let me give you an example of what they probably won't be announcing. And watch how this device works seamlessly with your Windows Phone 7 and Android. watch how this works transparently
to
the Android tech.
Never going to happen.
Right, right. So what's the size of that market? You know, when we come home and, you know, the dual income, you know, kids family, and one person comes from a Windows shop and one comes from a Mac shop, how do they work together? How do they collaborate? We're a long way from sort of doing that in a secure cross-platform way for everybody, especially so far as the cloud's concerned.
Can you talk about, and I'm sure that you read all the buzz about Dropbox and the authentication on devices and the hole that that left. If somebody did in fact get your password and they could get into your Dropbox, even if you change the master password at the website level, the machines are all still authenticated.
Oh yeah.
And that's a big hole for Dropbox. Can you talk about crash plan security?
That's one of the two big holes. That was one. The other one is their deduping technology is cross-user, so you implicitly know if something exists anywhere in the world in Dropbox immediately. So for instance, I can check a file and know within seconds if anyone else in the world has this file.
Really?
And knowing that, by the way, so now that I know someone else has this file, unless this file is top secret, right? Now I know that Dropbox has it somewhere else. Now I subpoena Dropbox or Amazon, and I can find out everyone that has it. So even with the cryptography,
that's why sometimes you'll put music up in your Dropbox. All of a sudden, they'll be there.
Exactly.
So that's how that works.
Yeah, yeah. So
I didn't even. Yeah. Okay, I did not know that.
So it
looks at some hash and says, okay, that's the same files I already have. So I'm just gonna. This user has a copy of it.
Yeah. Which is actually a valid web app strategy and serving strategy because you don't want to have multiple space
and you're not paying for duplicated space.
Except for they charge you for
it. Exactly, they're going to charge you for it. But it's a,
and their privacy policy says that no, in fact, nobody can tell. Nobody can know. Well, that's not actually true anymore. Right. What they should do is just to be more transparent and say, well, actually, you know, if you have something there, you know, someone else can figure out, not that it's you necessarily, but...
Well, the reality of transparency is a whole other podcast, or 12.
So you don't do the same kind of thing. You make all the users populate their own data, no matter if it's duplicate data.
We give users a choice. By default, we'll attempt to do something similar to that. It's a little more granular than what they're doing. But we've always given everyone, well, always is a strong word, almost from the very beginning, within a few months, we gave the option of a private key, so you could use your own cryptography, and there was no opportunity for us to dedupe it or anything, because we cannot retrieve the data. You subpoena us, we can't do anything. We're stuck. You're the encrypted archives.
That's really interesting, because it's if in fact a user on a Mac, let's say, were to use TrueCrypt or use an encrypted DMG disk image, and dump it on there, nobody's going to be able to get into it.
Yeah, exactly. You can't dedupe it.
That's a powerful competitive advantage.
I think Steve's going to sign up.
Steve already is signed up.
Is he signed up? Are you not signed up on CrashPlan? You're not using CrashPlan, are you? Yeah.
You know what? I have to geek out for a second. We have a server in our office, which is 1.2 miles from my house. And I actually have AppleScript synced folders, so I can dump stuff in and it sends it to the folder at the server level, because I have so much data.
Yeah.
And then also people in the office have to get into our main folder, so I can. It's not bidirectional.
The server's called Borscht Plan.
I know.
When the big earthquake hits Eden Prairie in both your house and your.
But I'm looking at all my. That's why I wasn't facetious when I said I've got almost 3 terabytes worth of stuff.
Yeah.
Because I've got 45,000 digital pictures, and I've got all of our videos of all the kids when they're growing up.
Wow.
You know, I probably have. Oh my God! I bet you I got a gig worth of videos that I want to keep in their pristine DV. Movie state, so that hopefully someday's editing software will get better.
Terrible.
Yeah. Isn't that what they said?
No, you said gig.
I think it's
like, wow, no.
I got a gig on my camera.
These are really small.
And these are all legit videos that you yourself shot.
Yeah, I keep those other ones on a portable hard drive. Thanks, Phil. Thanks for outing me.
Talk about a little bit how you grow. I mean, we've talked a lot about CrashPlan. We've talked, but let's go back to Code42 and some of the things that you're doing to move into new products. And we talked a little bit about offline before we started. You've got a new relationship that you've built with mobile development. So can we talk a little bit about that, Matt? You want to go down that path?
Some of you may know there's an amazing company in town called Recursive Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And they do, they're a great, great group of engineers. They've done a lot of local product work in town. And, you know, we reached out to them sort of to just look if and see if there was, you know, some way we could get, you know, some synergy going to grow faster. Because my biggest challenge at Code 42 is finding great people. And, you know, to their credit, their ability, it's just amazing, amazing group of guys. To their credit, they immediately said, you know, well, we're going to be like you guys someday. We're going to be a product company. The service thing that we're doing, it's temporary. Hmm. And, you know, we just kept our minds open and dealt with their challenges and our challenges and decided that the best way to for everyone to move forward was to merge.
Mm-hmm.
So we Recursive Awesome is merging into Code 42, and
wow, that's great.
We get a lot of very senior, talented, you know, engineers. Both, and you know, they're not just a mobile company. Some people say, oh, look, there's a mobile play by Code 42, but no, there are great engineers at all levels. Mm-hmm. You know, HTML5, Ruby. Mm-hmm. So just great technologies.
We've had Justin on quite a few times on the podcast. Justin Grammys,
who's well, and then we've done the Mobile March thing,
and you know, Justin and I, you know, Linda do the Mobile March thing. So I'm very well acquainted with Justin. He's and Sam over at Recursive Awesome. They've built a great company, and I know that they were very excited about moving into the product space. And I think that it's a great opportunity for you guys to work together and come to the same ends. So does that, there's no doubt that, you know, Justin has and his company have done other things well beyond mobile, but their focus has been mobile for quite a while, especially at Recursive Awesome. So so does this indicate some mobile growth, a play there, as you kind of alluded to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, they bring a lot of mobile talent. But they're also bringing a lot of cloud talent. You know, mobile by itself doesn't accomplish much. We're not in this, you know, futuristic, pure distributed world where you don't need a cloud somewhere to kind of act as the hub.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're really bringing both sides of the equation to bear for us. You know, obviously in-house, we have a lot of endpoint computing expertise, whether it be on Windows or Linux or Mac and the cloud. So just tremendous overlay. It's almost as if, you know, we were twins separated at birth, right? You start talking and it's like, oh, we love that too. And, mm-hmm. you know, you're so, you know, just huge, huge credit to those guys to, you know, because they didn't let egos get in the way. It would be so easy to say, no, we're going to do our own thing. Mm-hmm. We're going to make our own thing. We can do it better. And instead, you know, when we looked at each other's capabilities, we thought, wow, you know, this really is a case of 1 + 1 = 3. And we need to make it happen.
So we all think the mobile thing's going to have legs, right?
I think it's got some.
I definitely think
it's going to
maybe it could be big.
I'm going back to the desktop, though. All
right.
Big pocket desktop computer. Well,
but that's the question, though.
Probably
what's the definition of desktop now? So, see, desktop is not no longer just limited to that.
Is
the big PC on your desk.
The desktop is going to be your next television, basically.
Well, see, what I love is when I go to Best Buy at Eden Prairie and watch the people
walk
in.
Just the one at Eden Prairie.
Well, that's the one close to my house.
Only
watching people walk in with their big towers, you know, and they're trying to struggle to come in. I just think, wow.
To find
last time I did that was to drop it off to him to get rid of. So,
recycling center.
From an operational standpoint, though, are you going to operate as separate companies, or are you going to kind of merge?
Yeah,
there's one brand, Code 42.
Okay.
In our product.
So it's not Recursive Awesome Code 42.
No, Code 42 just got a little more awesome.
There you go. So are they going to move into your offices? Yeah. You guys weren't too far from each other, though.
No,
right?
we weren't. That was one of the great synergies. Yeah. You know, we've
expenses alone.
Yes,
a great value.
You know, for those that, I mean, hopefully your audience is primarily Minnesotan, so I won't bore
you. Oh, yes, very much so.
But, you know, in the 80s, there was this thing called River Place, this great, you know, jazz, retail. And so there are just tremendous, you know, tens of thousands of empty square feet there. And so that was one of the thoughts behind why we chose them, you know, moving forward to have our offices. So it's very easy for us to accommodate, you know,
beautiful
companies.
That's a great, great location.
It is. It's unbelievable.
So, I wanted to get into a little bit about the organization. So how many people total are there now going to be with Recursive Awesome?
We should be, you know, we're hiring about, I have to do some backwards math here. We hire about 1 to 2 people a week.
Wow.
So with RA, we're looking at By the time they're all over, probably 70 people.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's for North America. We outsource some key things to our business. A lot of folks don't know. We're actually three companies. We're a software company. We're a hardware company. We sell hardware. Mm-hmm. And we're also a cloud services company. And so the hardware piece of our business, we outsource assembly. So there's a large crew that does that for us. And then for the global sales piece, we have a very large direct sales force outside of North America that we have as well. That headcount isn't there. So I'm just telling you the kind of core Minnesota engineering and direct sales group for North America.
Tell us a little bit about how you started. You mentioned it was 2001. A lot of people don't know you came out of the Fallon advertising agency long time ago, in the 90s.
That was a huge part of our success, actually.
And I want you to talk about that a little bit. And also, I know you bootstrapped it. You did not really take any outside money for many, many years. Maybe you still haven't, right?
No, we haven't. And if I might, I'd like to go back a little bit further and say, if you sort of step back and you look at what shapes Code 42, besides, we have a lot of amazing people, but my contribution has been, I'm actually from the controlled data era.
So Me too.
I'm a product of their investment in education in this market and in Minnesota.
Plato.
So yeah, exactly.
Plato.
Plato was inspirational for me in the Apollo systems they ran.
You just talked about this.
I was with Authorware back in the 89.
Yeah, company, right? Yeah. So these early companies, this amazing technology, they really shaped sort of the future for me. And then later, I spent a decade at Fallon McElligott, which was one of the most award-winning agencies in America.
You betcha.
So I got to work with brands like BMW and Porsche and Nikon, and it was unreal. It was just an amazing, amazing opportunity. And so what happens is you sort of, if you will, in our DNA, we have this brand marketing capability, but we also have this inventive, innovative engineering aspect just out of this local culture. Mm-hmm. And so we're fusing the two together.
Yeah.
And it makes all the difference in the world.
What an awesome mix. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we try and say is, we're trying to build a great Minnesota software company that people have actually heard of. that create a technology brand that people know as opposed to, because we have a number of very successful technology companies here in Minnesota that power the back-end rooms, that aren't on the desktops, that aren't on the mobile devices, so they don't know that they exist.
Yeah. So you were able to build this company totally on your own revenues?
Right. Yeah, we bootstrapped it. This is, it's never easy.
Right.
This is sort of technically our third startup attempt. The first two were sort of hybrid. We did a product called Talking Point that had some venture capital in. We were the technology arm. There's a business unit. We owned about 10% of that company. That one failed. Then we did JumpNode in this market. We were their technology arm.
Okay.
We owned about 20% of that company.
Sure, that was an appliance company, right?
Yeah. Oh, kind of a mixed mode appliance, aggregation, reporting, alerting. Mm-hmm. And then that was when we said, you know what, this hybrid thing, let's just try and own it soup to nuts and do it all on our own. So we weren't fully responsible for those other things, but we learned a lot from their failure.
Sure.
And I think that's also helped us a great deal.
Who have been, or tell us about the importance of advisors to you over the years. I mean, if you haven't taken, outside smart money from big VC firms, who have you relied on? Or you don't necessarily need to name names, but
Well, one of our early advisors was, you guys remember a company called PaintShop Pro? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Well, their CEO, when we were launching CrashPlan, I didn't know how to price it. I know how to build it. I know how to price it. I know how to market it. But how much should I charge?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it $10 or
$10,000? Yeah.
I sought out some local experts, and Chris's name came up. He was their CEO at the time. They sold it to Corel. He was at JASC.
Chris Tufto,
right? Yeah. Now he's my VP of Global Sales. He was an early advisor and a great champion for us. We've got Lawson Software. We have their ex-CFO. She's on board on the management team. Amazing woman. We've got Mike Evangelist for the marketing side.
Former Apple guru.
Apple marketing guru.
Yeah, video guy, right?
Yeah,
wasn't he the...
Oh, and he's... he's a technologist too. I can't quite figure out if he's a marketer or an engineer. The guy's brilliant. You know, he's got more terabytes than I do at home. So yeah, great talent. So you know, Minnesota's been our advisor. There are a lot of really great resources mm-hmm. here, mm-hmm. and you know what? It doesn't cost shares. It doesn't cost a lot of money. It's usually coffee and some time. They're willing mm-hmm. to help out.
Yeah,
and then you know, hopefully, you can return the favor at some point.
Matt, let's use that as sort of a segue into talking a little bit about Ministar and the mini bar and where we're at today.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think. And so far, we're about halfway through the day, maybe a little more. But tell me where you think what has been a highlight for you. What do you get out of other than you know being a sponsor and getting you know great exposure for Code 42?
Yeah.
What do you look for from an organization or a group or a gathering like this?
Inspiration. I'm mostly here to try and give back. Mini Demo has done so much for us. We presented early on. It got us access. It gained awareness. It's one way to market, mm-hmm. Especially if you're bootstrapping. You don't have a lot of money. You should demo here. Mm-hmm. You know, people are passionate and they have feedback. New ideas, but mostly I'm here just to try and help out. I think the coolest thing I've seen so far today, mm-hmm. there was a discussion on file systems, building a file system from scratch.
Huh.
And it's one of those things, does the world need another file system? I mean, how many do we have, right? But Minnesota is very deep, very fertile soil, going way back.
Yes.
Most of the great file systems have roots here. Mm-hmm. In one way or another, the DNA came from the soil. And mm-hmm. I was not disappointed. Some really great, great points. And so that was great fun. And then I stepped in and got to see, you know, marketing, brands, and community. I mean, it's amazing time. Not to mention beer and pizza.
Yeah, right.
Well, wait a minute, where's your beer? Beer? Yeah. What beer?
It's a Minnesota beer, and it's a Minnesota great beer. Story.
Yeah. Surly. Yeah, some Surly beer, yeah.
Yeah, this is an amazing beer coming up.
So. And we get to watch a Minnesota horse run in the Kentucky Derby when the beer starts flowing.
Do we?
That's what I'm looking for.
Right.
Yeah. Mucho Macho Man.
All right.
The 3M guy that owns it. Get it?
Mucho Macho Man.
Yeah, 3M.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, gentlemen, what do you see as some of the highlights? You know, Matt has kind of weighed on a few things, so let's talk a little bit about Mini Demo. What did you? What have you thought so far?
I think it's the people.
Excuse me, Mini Bar. Yeah.
I think it's the people. I mean, the number of people that I've met that I've either just bumped into before, I've actually had what I call significant conversations with, mm-hmm. and that's been really unusual. Because normally at these things, people are rushing the sessions and they're going by each other. You might bump into somebody for a couple of minutes, but it's not anything typically that's long and drawn out. But I've had some really great conversations.
Good hallway stuff.
Yeah. So
I even got a gig already today.
Really?
That I didn't
really?
Wasn't prepared
stripping?
For when I came.
Please,
stripping
no,
again?
Don't load us up with that image, please.
Grab on the pole.
No, it's a blogging.
Sorry, buddy.
It's a blogging.
Just so 1,200. Plus people, we think. Is it too big?
I don't think so.
No.
What I find interesting is that there's, you know, there's a lot of the people that we know here in town, the kind of the core, but there's a lot of new people. So it's always important to kind of see the revitalization or how vital the tech community is here. Which I think that we're so close to it, we think, oh yeah, we've got to nurture this thing. But this is a really big, vibrant tech community.
Well, you know what? And what the biggest thing is. When we started Minovate, what's now over three years, one of the things that we kept talking about was how the net was going to change everything. The net and the web was going to change everything. You know, and you're seeing not only so many people developing internet web-based startups, but you're seeing more and more companies that are mapping their businesses onto the web. And now everybody is talking about mobile access, and I want to have our stuff, whatever it is, transactional or information-based, up on the web and up there in a mobile fashion. And that's why when there's a lot of people that are here, not only with their own companies, but representing their companies that are trying to find out kind of what's going on and what's hot. And,
yep. Oh, yeah.
You know, where should we be moving and what should we be moving into? And I've always submitted that it really gets interesting when the people with checkbooks show up. Because they're the ones that are going to pay for the development. They're going to buy the apps mm-hmm. or the services. And I'm seeing a lot of people with checkbooks here today.
Oh, that's
so
great.
That's good.
Yeah, some of the people on the list. There was even a former CMO of Best Buy I saw on the list. I haven't run into him yet, but and there was a guy doing a session on why you should have an offline store, not just an online store. I thought that was interesting. You know, the array of sessions, the breadth and.
I found this morning session, which was entrepreneurs and the idea session, which was immediately we want to get your ideas via Twitter, and it was like, wait just a second here. We're all in one friggin' room. Why do we need to submit our ideas on Twitter? And it was like, just because it's out there doesn't mean we can't. We have to use it. So, but I find it interesting that we're not seeing. 1,200 people show up on a beautiful Saturday. In a city where summer is planned for a Thursday, this is pretty important stuff. Yet I don't see anything as far as I would be willing to bet you there's nobody here from the Strip.
There's nobody here
from the Pioneer Press.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any TV cameras. It's like this is a big deal.
Well, and what else is interesting is because Robert Stevens is so the CTO of Best Buy is so passionate about what's going on and about helping to nurture. The startup community. He sat across from me. We were eating our pizza, and just having some great conversation about some stuff. And he is just here, so he's not leading sessions. He didn't want to get up and do a keynote. He just wants to kind of be this catalyst.
And this is a phenomenal
facility to have these sorts of events in.
Yeah.
And that I think is getting short shrift because that really means a lot to have. To have a guy like him in his position to be so keen on helping to kickstart things and nurture things along.
Yeah, he's really taken the lead, bless him, he's tying together the startup community with a big outfit like Best Buy is no small task.
Well, and the thing that's cool is he sees things because he's invited. Mm-hmm. To all these places. He hobnobs with Larry and
Google
Sergey
and Facebook and
all
and,
these, people. Yep. And so he's got access that most of us don't
first
have.
Yep.
Yeah, right. We're hanging together.
Steve knows my first name. You're Larry.
I actually had breakfast with Larry Page once.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a brief bagel, at the Laguna Niguel.
A brief bagel.
Ritz-Carlton. In like 2003. Yep.
So
we asked him about his girlfriend. We asked him about his private life, but we didn't get much out of him.
He's got a girlfriend?
About the algorithm for PageRank. Come on.
Yeah, like an idiot, I tried to get him on something else,
You were probably still using AltaVista back then, right?
I can't remember. No, I knew who he was. It was a storage conference called StoreWith. Remember a guy named... George Gilder?
Sure.
He did really great events.
Yeah.
Eric Schmidt. In fact, Eric Schmidt might have been at that same event before he was Google CEO.
So, Matt, we've got you here, and we talk about innovation, and innovation is very much about looking forward. Mm-hmm. What do you see in the rest of this year, and maybe first part of next year happening? Obviously, you've got big plans for Code 42. What do you see outside of your doors what may be... coming out of Minnesota, but also out of tech in general. What do you see as sort of the next wave?
I think this new cloud thing, we're still figuring out. I think you'll see a lot happening around security. And I don't mean just, this is more enterprise security. How do you weave companies together through firewalls in a collaborative way so they can work together and still sort of retain control of information? That's a huge challenge right now. These companies are struggling, they're bringing in iPads. How do you manage the consumerization of IT within an organization without giving up your IP? Those are some of the things that I'm hearing that I think are pretty interesting.
Well, I think if you talk to any IT department, I think the one thing that scares a lot of IT departments is innovation, because then it's opening up and opening up. If you've ever been involved with a large company, just, hey, can I get my Outlook calendar sync with Google?
No, we don't want to do that. Right. We don't want to let that open.
Yeah, George Reese calls it the Department of No.
Yeah.
I love that. He says that's the problem, the Department of No.
Well, I mean, that's valid concern.
No, it's valid concern.
Yeah.
Come on.
It is. I mean, sure, they've got a job to do, and they've got to manage, you know, thousands of users and to keep them, you know, uptime. So they have to, like, have some sort of rules around it.
So, Matt, let me ask you something. This is one of those, it's all about semantics. Is the cloud really new? The cloud's been with us ever since.
I came here in 98 and joined a cloud startup that had been started up 4 years before here.
But it wasn't known as the cloud. It was known as the internet, right?
The cloud, my answer is yes.
Yeah.
It's very new. In fact, it's still an infant. It's so new that... you know, it's still a bit of a. It's just. It's. We're in mosaic days right now. We. You know. Look. EC2 just went down huge. Data was lost. Right. We haven't even figured out how to store data at petascale reliably, right? We don't know how to secure things. We don't. We our phones are still, you know, disconnecting and reconnecting and dropping calls. There's so much that we have to figure out yet. Conversations. I mean, good Lord, we're still typing together in ASCII. Right, yet these cameras are moving to HD. That's a tremendous amount of data. The AI aspects right now are just out of control, the things that you can do. So we're sort of moving backwards. You know, if you want to look at the cloud to me, and the cloud is something to everyone else, is different. But to me, the cloud is the Uber frame, and these mobile devices are sort of your thin client, you know, your Weiss terminal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens to be that the Weiss terminal has 10 points of input, variable touch, HD camera, always on, and can, you know, hook into a supercomputer the likes of which we never imagined to do something as simple as figure out what I just said so I can go find, you know, and infer intent and locate where I want to get from point A to point B. You know, these are the goals. We're still a long way from that, but it's happening.
You mentioned one of the hot topics that has been seared into my brain, and it's one of the reasons why I listen to the Security Now podcast with Steve Gibson and Laura Laporte.
Yeah, it's a great podcast, yeah.
People say, you actually listen to that?
It's, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Me
because
too. Me
I
too.
I'm
live
hyper interested.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well.
Keep a window open.
There you go.
It's good.
That's crazy.
It is good background.
TV over the window.
It's geek porn.
That's what the second monitor is for. You put your Twit Live.
It's definitely a geek porn. But here's the thing that's been amazing. And this started when I sat in a coffee shop 2.5 years ago, and a guy walked over to me and he asked me, "How can I want to get on and do some banking. How can I stay secure?" And that he had a brand new compact laptop
don't
that looked
do
like
it at
huge.
A coffee shop.
That's the first
but,
thing.
Yeah. But,
number one.
And it turns out, you know, I mean, we talked about SSL,
right.
And we talked about the sorts of things you should and should not do. You know, don't check your email in here because it's your passwords, usernames going through the air. And here we are, 2.5 years later.
Yeah.
SSL is still not ubiquitous.
Yeah.
VPN is still. Corporate, but personal VPNs
very,
are still
very
too expensive.
Network. Yeah,
yeah, and it's also extraordinarily slow.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the overhead is not worth the VPN connection. So now, more and more things are happening in the cloud.
Outside
and
one, of the VPN, yeah.
Outside the VPN. So now I'm on the iPad, and I have to admit, in some respects, I don't know what's encrypted and what's not.
Oh, right.
Exactly. So I don't know. You know, is this stuff SSL when it's leaving the Wells Fargo app and going up to? I don't know the answer. Now that's why I use my phone when I do secure apps because I'm over the 3G network. At least I got a little bit more possibility there. But where do you see that level? So if I'm sitting in a coffee shop and I'm accessing files on CrashPlan,
right?
Because I want to back up.
Right.
You guys obviously have to think deeply about
we do.
About where are people going to be accessing.
Yeah.
If we're going to build an app to access all this, what do we have to build in the way of security?
We live in this space. I mean, almost without exception, every major Silicon Valley technology company on the West Coast runs CrashPlan on more than 80% of their desktops. You know, just think of one, we're probably there. And we live in this security space. This is the primary concern. And I find it interesting, just to kind of give you a litmus test real quick. World of Warcraft uses three-factor authentication to protect virtual goods that aren't even real.
Okay. Yeah.
And yet, I'm guessing in most of the places you work, you're still relying on username and password.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know. So look at how far we have to go, and the games are actually leading the security story.
Interesting.
And some of the world's leading computing companies, are using three-factor authentication. So I think you'll see, for instance, pretty soon, the death of a password. I don't think it's possible to secure financial information with a username and password, frankly. You know, I've tried the lectures with the wife. Don't use the same password everywhere. You know, then you read about Lifehacker or whatever, some database going rogue, and then it's, honey, did you ever use this service?
Yeah,
which
right.
password did you use? Oh, no, not that one, please. You know, it's just like, you got to go back out and change everything.
Right.
You know, so that's what I mean. It's very infantile, and I think security will drive a lot of this, but thankfully, I don't think it's going to be the no group. I think that, you know, the cat's out of the bag. We know what to expect, and we're no longer willing to accept things like 10 meg file attachment limits or, you know, 2 gigabyte mailbox limits when Google will give us 6 and let us move 40, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think it's going to be a better place where we're headed, in a faster place and in a more easily used place, even though we're more secure. I don't think the two are interoperable. I think they're interoperable now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we probably ought to get back
we
out
should.
There
yeah.
and finish out the rest of the day. Thank you very
Thank
much
you,
to Matt Dornquist
for
joining us. Congratulations on not only Crash Plan, but Code 42 and the merger with Recursive Awesome. I'm glad that's going on. And we've got a lot of stuff going on. And I think if you can't be at a place like this and not go, wow, what an innovation community.
What a tech community.
Yep. It's just incredible. So it's always great being here. So thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for That's it thanks, for the Mibigan podcast.
Adios. Thank you.